Welcome to the Global from Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business from Hong Kong is broken down into straight up actionable advice. And now, your host, Michael Michelini.
Thank you, listeners, for tuning in to another episode of Global from Asia. It's getting close to Thanksgiving here, and I'm in Shenzhen, China. Thought it'd be a little bit of a funny one to mention. My dinner was turkey a little bit early, about a week early. It was a Chinese flavored soy sauce induced turkey that my fiance here, Wendy, just fed me. So washing that down with some baijiu and recording another episode of,
boy, that was a zinger,
Global from Asia. We're up to episode 7 here, and I appreciate those of you with the patience to bear through the first. Just like anything in business, I learn best by doing, and I've gotten better with the audio production, editing, and the sound quality, so I hope these have improved and I've been getting some better positive feedback. At the end of the show, we're going to kind of go through some iTunes reviews and also summarize this very valuable podcast with Andrew Layden, a good friend of mine I know many years. He's a retired American lawyer living in Hong Kong, and he gives some pretty straight up advice and tips. So again, it's very good to maybe have a pen and paper because this is some valuable stuff. But you can also go on the blog, globalfromasia.com/episode7, and I try my best to summarize it in text and some documents from the IRS and other fun government and legal websites for you to refer to after.
Something for your briefcase.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to another episode of Global from Asia. I'm here with Andrew Layden, or also known as Penguin6 on Twitter. And we're really lucky to have him here giving some practical, maybe quote-unquote legal or maybe business advice for expats in Hong Kong or Asia. So thank you for being here, Andrew.
Good morning, Michael. How have you
been? Been good.
Yeah, as you mentioned, I will be offering some, let's say, legal suggestions, not really legal advice, as I'm not a practicing attorney here in the Hong Kong or Asia, for that matter. I'm an attorney in the United States. But much of the legal advice I'm going to give comes from the perspective of being a former lawyer who is also a former entrepreneur.
That's a really good angle for the listeners today. I know most of us listening are entrepreneurs or small business owners that are kind of either worried about how to do business in Asia as an expat or currently going through that process. So that's definitely great. Maybe you can just formally introduce yourself and your background for us.
Well, as Michael said, my name is Andrew Layden. Most people in Asia know me as Penguin6 on Twitter and Facebook and all the other things like that. I am a former attorney, a former congressional aide in the U.S. Congress, author of a book on military history, and a former entrepreneur. So I've pretty much covered all those bases of cool things to do. Now living my life as an expat here in Hong Kong, have not taken on any major new projects since arriving, but do a number of small, moderate things, helping out the startup community here in Hong Kong, and coming up with a few little apps and e-commerce platforms and a few other little things here and there.
Great. Yeah. I mean, we've met in the startup community here in Hong Kong, and you've definitely been contributing a lot and helped me personally in some advice through the years too. So I appreciate that. I think the opening question is maybe I think Americans specifically, but maybe you can, as Western entrepreneurs in Asia or Hong Kong, some of the ways that Americans can deal with opening a business in Hong Kong.
Well, I think let's focus specifically on Americans because, quite frankly, they have the hardest time. The thing you have to remember at all times is that you are still an American and you have an American passport and you are required to obey all the rules related to Americans, most notably taxes. Now, you have to file taxes every year, and this is an important point I should mention. You have to file taxes every year as an American overseas, even if you make $10,000 and exclusion is more than that. You still have to file. So please file your taxes every year. Now, Americans living overseas are granted a $93,000 exemption. So your first $93,000 of income overseas is not taxable. But to get that exemption, you have to file. If you don't file, you don't get the exemption, and thus you're liable for the taxes on any money you did pay, which is a little bit of a trick. And a lot of people fall into that gap. You're also eligible for a huge write-off, especially here in Hong Kong, of your living expenses. I don't remember the number, but it's almost $100,000 could be, taken off of just your housing expenses here in Hong Kong. It's just crazy. One other really, really important thing that goes over the head of most Americans is an IRS form called 5471. IRS form 5471 deals with Americans who own a substantial portion of an overseas corporation. I believe it is if you are a director of a foreign corporation and 10% or a certain other percentage of the voting shares, please look it up, 5471. There's a huge checklist of whether or not it applies to you. And if it does apply to you, you're looking at about 60 to 80 hours of bookkeeping to fill out this monstrously annoying form. Conversely, should you decide to set up an American corporation, let's say like an LLC in Delaware, and have a foreign owner, you know, one of your partners is a foreigner, that American corporation, as you know, that LLC will have to file its own disclosure. I'm afraid I can't remember the number off the top of my head. But again, it's one of those little pitfalls that happens for Americans doing business overseas. You have to report your foreign corporations, and then conversely, if it's an American corporation, you have to report foreign ownership. Switching to one other big issue that catches us is something called FBAR, the Foreign Bank Account Reporting. If you hold a bank account or multiple bank accounts in foreign banks and you exceed $10,000 at any one time during the year, so even if it's just passing money from one guy to another, you have $10,000 in there for a few minutes, kaboom, you are hit by FBAR reporting requirements. These are money laundering forms that have to be filed separately from your tax return. And then you have to declare all foreign bank accounts. So, for example, if you have a $10,000 bank account in Hong Kong and a $2,000 bank account in Shenzhen, and then a bank account in Japan from the time you were a student that had $5 in it, you have to report all three bank accounts as, you know, being foreign bank accounts. Really a big trap that a lot of expats fall into. And last year, they decided, hey, FBAR is not enough. Let's do another one. Let's call it FATCA. FATCA is a monstrous reporting requirement that not only requires you to report any bank account, generally when worry about like 50,000 US or more, but also requires foreign banks to start reporting their accounts. Now, here in Asia, some countries have already started making deals with the United States on how to report US citizens who are holding bank accounts to the US government. Some have not, most notably China. However, the United States and China are engaged in extremely high-level negotiations regarding the reporting of U.S. citizen bank accounts held in Chinese banks. So if you have these bank accounts, don't think they're going to stay anonymous for very long. It's going to be coming across Asia over the next 5 years.
Wow, that's really great information. A little bit scary. I know there's definitely listeners that I personally know some that have not been keeping up with their yearly filing. Any tips for them?
Well, that's the really tricky thing on the filing. You know, we're all brought up as kids. Hey, if you don't owe, you don't have to file. All right, that's sort of this urban legend that applies to taxes. And of course, with a $93,000 exemption, there's a ton of kids, a ton of expats over here who are below that minimum, and they've always been like, hey, I don't know, I don't have to file. But hidden in the subtext there is a minimum income requirement for filing. And that is, I can't remember off the top of my head, but it's about like $9,000. So if you make more than $9,000, you have to file, even if you don't owe anything. Now, as an expat, the bigger issue is that exclusion, the $93,000. I say 93, but you got to understand it's indexed, so it goes up every year. It's 93.5 last year or something like that. But that $93,000 exclusion only applies if you file. You can't just sort of say, hey, I didn't do it. Now, let's say you haven't been filing taxes for a while. If you don't really owe any taxes, it's really just kind of a matter of sorting out the paperwork. They're not going to, like, beat you up. You know, for example, if you didn't owe taxes, the penalty is, you know, XX percent of the taxes you didn't pay. Well, XX of zero is, you know, zero. Okay, thanks, guys. Some of the other things like the FBAR and the FATCA, they do have some sort of penalties associated with them, very severe penalties. But the reports of people being assigned penalties when they didn't actually owe anything are minuscule. I think maybe one case or something like that. But my advice is if you haven't been filing this stuff, if you haven't been filling out these FBARs, you got to talk to a professional. You need to talk. First, you could talk to the embassy. You know, the embassies have tax offices in most of them. Or you could talk to a tax attorney or a tax accountant. And there are several here in Hong Kong and throughout Asia who specifically deal with American taxes and overseas taxes. So these are some of the things that you kind of want to get cleared up. Now, it's like I said, it's not the end of the world. They're not going to break your fingers or anything like that. But it's just a paperwork hassle for a lot of us. And that's really the biggest problem with being an American expat. It's just the paperwork we have to sort out, especially going back to the United States.
All right. Thank you, Andrew, again. I just maybe want to clarify filing as business or as a person. And if there's any differences or any other FBAR, if you have a business bank account versus a personal?
Well, the FBAR actually, it's not technically a bank account. It's what you have signing authority over. So if it's a business bank account, but your signature can get to the money, you know, they're very excited about that. It gets to an extreme. Some people have said, well, do I have to file my eBay Hong Kong account, you know, or my PayPal account in Hong Kong? I read an interesting dialogue about octopus cards once, because the octopus card had a stored value of 50 Hong Kong dollars. So was that something that you had access to? Actually, I think the IRS came back and said, no, don't worry about those. But, you know, they can take it to an extreme. So the filing thing for the FBAR and stuff is, you know, tied to you and what you have your signing authority. Now, whether your corporation has to file taxes, well, the corporation is doing business solely in, say, Hong Kong, the only possible nexus they could find maybe are your servers in the United States. This is a big issue for web companies. Where are your servers physically located? I know, for example, in copyright issues, if your server is located in the United States can claim some sort of jurisdiction over you and your company. The fellow to ask about that was named Kim.com. Kim.com with, what was the site? Anyway, they had servers in the United States. Mega Upload. They had servers set up in the United States, so the FBI took an interest in them. Now, I believe he's relaunched that site, but I don't believe he has any servers in the United States. This gets to be a big issue when it relates to the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, which is the law in the United States about shared web content. So let's say you put a photograph on your blog here in Asia that you stole from Time Magazine or something like that. And then Time Magazine writes your ISP a nasty letter saying, take this down. If your web server's in the United States, well, then, you know, your web server's got to comply with the U.S. laws on takedowns and stuff like that. But if your web server's overseas, you could, you know, make an argument, well, I'm obeying the rules of, say, Singapore when it comes to copyrighted information and stuff like that. So as an expat, especially if you're in the web and technology business, you know, you've got to look for what sort of connections are you maintaining with your home country. And this applies also to Europeans. You know, are you hosting your servers back on grandma's web server back in, you know, London or something like that? You can bring yourself liable to EU law, UK law on hosting and you know, laws on reporting based on those machines having a physical presence in those countries. So these are things you need to watch out for. Now, I should preface this again. By the way, I am a retired attorney. The laws on these things change frequently. If I have said something that gives you cause for alarm, please consult a current practicing professional attorney, as the rules may have changed. And so.
Yeah. Thank you, Andrew. I hope anyone here, this is all free podcast, free advice, and Andrew's, you know, donating his time. So, of course, we can't be quoted on anything in any of these podcasts. We're just trying to help anybody here. Suggestions maybe is the best.
Suggestions for further investigation.
Yes. So maybe use this as a basis or stimulate your thought process. So we went through some fun tax stuff, and now we went into some technical and server.
Yeah, let's talk a little about being an entrepreneur in companies. You know, one of the first things I'm often hit by startups is, I need you to incorporate me. I need you to set up a share agreement, and I need you to set up employee stock ownership and an options plan. And I look back at them and I'm like, well, why don't you make some money first? You know, there is a huge amount of concern that goes on about setting up a corporation. I often relate to it. When I worked in an office, we used to buy lottery tickets as a group. And so somebody would go out for lunch, and there'd be 5 tickets. And lo and behold, someone would be like, I need to see all the tickets. What if that person takes the ticket away when we win? Oh, my God, well, you know, we're going to have a lawsuit. And I'm just like, you know, chill. The same sort of pressure goes on when it comes to setting up corporations. Well, how much stock should this guy have? What percentage of the equity should this guy have? Oh, I've got to raise money, da-da-da-da-da-da. Really, the legal aspects of setting up a corporation should be coming a couple months down the road. You know, from your idea to your business plan, even up until you start doing some of the fundraising. Because you'll have some of the ideas about you know, how things are going to be set up. You can have some unwritten agreements. You can even have a few written down agreements. I think one of the best pieces of advice I've gotten about setting up a company, especially as it relates to equity, is 50-50 is not fair. Okay? And you will discover this as an entrepreneur, that your idea of a 50% contribution to the company is not the same as your partner's idea of a 50% contribution. One of you will do more work than the other. What I've seen advised and actually recommend myself is, you know, a certain percentage, you could say 20-20 or something like that, but then the remaining, say, 30% and 30% is based on performance goals met over a certain period of time. These are some of the things that come back to haunt you later in life, is that you end up with minority participant holding a large amount of equity. So as you're looking at doing these partnerships, you know, make people earn it. Don't just give it because you think 50-50 is fair. It's not really. What other interesting tidbits could I say about setting up a company? As I mentioned, you know, wait a bit before you do it. You're not sure where the structure is going to be. You're not sure where your money might come from. You might be setting up a corporation in Hong Kong, but suddenly get a cash infusion from Singapore. And the guy from Singapore doesn't want to invest in a Hong Kong company because he doesn't want to have a Hong Kong business connection. So maybe he'd rather you set up in Singapore. So then you have to wind down and dissolve a company in Hong Kong and then stand up and set up one in Singapore. So really, these business type things, these legal business type things, they can wait a little bit. You know, you can give your general idea, but, you know, going to the attorneys, spending money to the attorneys is something that you can hold off on for a bit.
Yeah, sometimes I use MOU, Memorandum of Understanding, put clauses where the company's not yet been formed, but when it does become a company, this can become a agreement. I hope that's okay.
That's a good idea.
It's a good idea to get things down on paper. I mean, the legal strength of that depends on where you are and what's signed and dated, if it's whatever, or if it's just, you know, an email that you sent to another guy or something like that. And that depends on the regions and the different countries. So, you know, but it can show a general thought process. It can show a general concept. And in some countries, it could be enforceable. Some countries, it might not. You know, another great resource is there are a ton of documents available on the internet, open source legal documents set up by entrepreneur communities, primarily in Silicon Valley. There's some folks here in Hong Kong who are now doing it as well. And these provide some general guidelines about how to set up structures of companies. They even have some what we call boilerplate template language that you can just sort of put in your names and stuff like that. It, of course, has to be tweaked to the specifics of your business, but not necessarily overly so or done by a lawyer for that matter. I do always recommend a lawyer at least review what it is you want to do. With lawyers, I should note, you can pay an attorney to fill out all the forms. And it'll be fast because they're just going to take this boilerplate form that they have, put in your name, structure it slightly to the whims that you want, give it to a final review, and then send you a bill. Or you can take some of these open source legal documents, fill in the names yourself, fill in the concepts that you want, then take that to an attorney and pay a little bit less for their review. It depends on the attorney, of course. But it's kind of like an accountant. You know, you can fill out the tax forms yourself, take it to an accountant, they'll review it, and then they'll charge you a small amount for the review. Or you can take a shoebox full of receipts to the accountant, dump it on his desk, and he'll fill out everything and charge you a lot more.
Got it. Thank you so much for this. Yeah, this is great. We've also had other guests on the show also say, you know, lean startup or validate your business, get customers first or investors first. Don't just rush into opening a company and having shares with partners with no money and barely enough to even open a bank account. So I think this general advice from Andrew, I think as well as most others, is, you know, don't rush into opening a company, or if you're listening about a Hong Kong company, first make a business, or at least get the beginnings of a business together first. Kind of wrap it up, what's one kind of tip or idea of maybe benefits for a Hong Kong company or as a global business, or if you don't think so, what are your feedback?
I go back and forth on that a lot. I often refer back to a few years ago. I was literally about to move to Hong Kong. You may remember getting what was called the Snowpocalypse and Snowmageddon on the East Coast. The big moving truck was scheduled to pick up at our house on a Monday, and we were clobbered by a snowstorm of 42 inches of snow. The truck couldn't get in. We had to move our pickup date back a week, which meant we missed our boat, which we had to move back 3 weeks for the boat. So our whole move to Hong Kong then got moved back about 2 months. Funny thing was, when the truck was supposed to show up for the next boat, it snowed again. But anyway, while that snow was coming down, I thought about that whole process. So everything got out of kilter because of the snowstorm. And I said to myself, you know the guys in Silicon Valley? It's 75 degrees right now and peaceful and calm. They're at work right now. Any entrepreneurial work I've done, I'm just worried about keeping the heat on in my house. Why does that relate to Hong Kong? Because it doesn't snow here, of course. But it relates to what are the outside factors affecting your business? What things are going on outside of your core business that affect your ability to perform that business? Now, in Hong Kong, one of the negatives is the expense. You know, the cost of renting an apartment in Hong Kong is obscene. This means that you, as the entrepreneur or your employees, are a large portion of their income is going towards paying the rent. Conversely, though, because Hong Kong is so dense and you can find an office space a lot, you know, a hop, skip, and a jump down from wherever you're living, your commuting times are diminished. These are both examples of external forces relating to how your business is performed. Because let's face it, if you're an entrepreneur, it's a 24-hour job. Okay, everything counts. Hong Kong itself is a hub for finance. It's somewhat of a hub for media, but more in the sort of the advertising, not so much, say, web hosting, not quite like Singapore setup. It's a hub for toys. And it's also sort of a transshipment point in the trading e-commerce world. Now, I'm not even about to start talking about e-commerce while I'm sitting here with Michael, who is, you know, one of the Asian experts on e-commerce back and forth. But as a mention of these things, these are the things that people are interested in Hong Kong. These are the things that will have synergies with the people that you meet. You know, I was talking to an entrepreneur who is developing a small consumer appliance here in Hong Kong. And I was mentioning him to a friend who works at a large bank. And the bank was able to say, by the way, we are connected to this company in China. We just did a major investment in them. Does your friend want an introduction? So these are the kind of synergies you'll find in Hong Kong. You know, someone who's invested in something like that. Let's say that you're doing a startup here in Hong Kong related to country music. Okay, well, you're not going to find someone who says, hey, I got a buddy in Nashville who has a recording studio. You know, this is not the place to set up a country music startup. You know, and somewhat sad to say, because of the price of land and because of the data center location areas, this might not be the best place to set up a web startup, certainly a social media startup. Those are being drawn to Singapore, and Singapore is doing a very good job pulling those in, those type of little app. Based, social media-based type things seem to be going to Singapore much more than Hong Kong. But, you know, on the other hand, Hong Kong is the toy capital of the world. All the toys, many of the toys of the world are designed here, sent to Shenzhen for manufacture, then brought back. There are some exquisite toy shops, you know, for, I mean, if you've been up with our friend Hyper Casey, he's in the toy world, if you take him to Mong Kok, we'll walk down alleys and underneath buildings and suddenly find some amazing studios where they're building incredibly high-end stuff. So opening up, say, a toy e-commerce place, this is the place to do it. This is a really good place to do it. So I think, you know, relating to Asia, you know, what are the external factors affecting you? If you're trying to do business in, say, London, and you're set up in Thailand, well, that's cute, but, you know, you're going to have to deal with time zone change. You're going to have to deal with all those things. You have to ask, is my business, my core business related to me being in Thailand, or is it related to me having a presence in London? You know, where should I physically be? But, you know, I know Michael's previous business, he was taking items he was getting locally sourced in Shenzhen, sending them back to the U.S. where he had friends and family to help himself. So, of course, he had to be here in the trading business. So you got to ask, is this the right place? Are there too many external factors? And, you know, is this really the best place in the world I could be for the type of business I want to be doing?
Thank you, Andrew. I know you're retired and maybe you don't want so many people pestering you with questions, but if there's any way that the audience might want to follow up or contact you or maybe even do business with you, how would you like them to?
Google Penguin 6. You can find me that way. I mean, that's the easiest way to find me. Yeah, tweet or whatever. But like I said, now I know we've made this caveat, I think, twice during this program. We'll make it one more time. The rules and the laws change all the time. My advice is based on a generalist understanding of what is out there. There are probably some slight differences or minor modifications that will impact you, please consult your own professional legal advice, especially as it relates to your tax situation, because everybody is unique on this matter and you need the most up-to-date current information that is available.
Got it. All right, thank you so much. And that's a wrap.
Well, that was entertaining.
I'm sure your heads are spinning just as much as mine. I really thank Andrew for his time there. And just try my best to summarize. Again, you can find notes and forms on the website at globalfromasia.com/episode7. He kind of went into an IRS form for us Americans of IRS 5471 for owning an overseas company, the FBAR for foreign bank accounts over $10,000, the FATCA, and then he went into don't get caught in the myth of if you don't earn any money, you don't owe any taxes, you don't have to file. Even if you don't earn anything or you don't have any owe anything, you still have to file. This is also, again, one of the disadvantages, I think, of being an American globally or internationally. He gave some advice, maybe asking the embassy near you about your tax questions that might help you for free. Of course, also a professional tax attorney. We talked about copyright and where your data is hosted in DCMA. And then, you know, we went into more interesting stuff for me, which was being an entrepreneur. And before you get into like filing a company and taxes and everything, you know, just like other guests have said, you know, get validation, get customers, get income before you kind of get caught up in investing a lot of time and money with international companies. Another interesting tidbit he was saying is don't just go 50-50 on a handshake with a friend or a business partner. And he says that's not always fair. There's usually someone that's doing more of the work or taking more of the risk. And he gave an interesting point of 20-20, 20%, 20%, with a 30-30 split that could be used on performance of each partner that could be claimed later. Then he was talking about finding some open source documents or boilerplate examples. And then we put that up on the site from Y Combinator on episode 7 notes.
Some words from our loyal listeners.
Okay, and now for a iTunes review. Actually, I honestly don't even know how to check iTunes reviews. I'm searching online about how to do that. But it was a Twitter tweet I got from my friend Jacob Miller in Shanghai. He's a good friend of mine. We've met a few times and hung out. And his tweet to me and to Penguin 6 on the day of recording was, just listen to podcast number 6, great podcast and much improved sound quality over the first few. Looking forward to podcast 7. Thanks for listening, Jacob, and I hope you enjoy this one too. And I'm going to try my best to keep improving maintaining the sound quality of acceptable by everybody. Okay, and that's about it for episode 7. Feedback's always appreciated, and again, if you enjoy this listening, I'd really appreciate some feedback on iTunes or Twitter or any other medium you prefer. Thank you.
To get more info about running an international business via Hong Kong, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.